Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Everybody, this is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode number 96 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today, we have a very special guest.
Mm-hmm.
We are, Abby and I, I'd say, are super fans.
Super fans, for sure.
So today with us, we have Dr. Sandra Elliott, and she is with Touch Math. Hello, Sandra. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me. This is great. So I get to talk some of my favorite subjects, which are math, students who are struggling, dyscalculia, so...
You're in the right place.
Yes. Thank you for being here.
Well, do you mind just telling us a little bit about you and sort of how you became involved with Touch Math?
Two words. Special education teacher and center principal. Time at Eureka in the early days when we were writing it. So special ed and math came together. And of course, as a special ed teacher and administrator, I used Touch Math. I bought a lot of it. And, you know, suddenly I get this call from the CEO at the time saying, I need somebody to write a white paper about Touch Math. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, you know, I used it, but I used it a long time ago. So and then you realize it was actually started in 1975.
So wow, we're celebrating, I didn't know that.
Yeah, celebrating our 49th birthday. Yeah. Do you believe that?
That's so crazy. 1975.
It is.
And who developed Touch Math, out of curiosity?
A teacher from the Colorado Springs Public School District, District 11, where I actually was a principal for a while. She had students who were on the spectrum, not learning math, and so she explicitly connected for them objects and the number by placing a little dot on it so that they did the concreteness fading. And you're not going to believe this, but you know they have the cliche about things that are developed in the garage, Microsoft, mm-hmm. things like that. She did it at her kitchen table and
really?
Started. And she wrote the early curriculum. I still have the written pieces of paper that she did it. I have breakfast with her. Sean Lockwood, our CEO, and I do breakfast with her about once every 6 months. But she is, yeah. I mean, it is, you want to say it's cliche, but it is how most things come about. She had sure. students who were struggling, and she figured out if I do this, it works. Mm-hmm. And now neuroscience goes, well, we now know why special ed teachers get the results they do, because we can see it and prove it. So a lot of what we did in those early days is now that's research proven.
Mm-hmm. So if you had to define Touch Math for somebody who can't see it, they're not looking at it right now. We're hoping to put some examples mm-hmm. up
or
in the show notes.
Or people have never heard of it.
Yeah. How would you describe Touch Math?
It is a math program based on the research around how we learn mathematics, but it is solely focused on students who are struggling, whether they have a neurodevelopmental disorder, dyscalculia, cognitive difficulties, you name it, or they're temporarily struggling because they've been absent a lot. So the whole program is based on the student who is struggling permanently or temporarily, and how, as I put it, how humans learn mathematics and master the concepts and skills.
And so how is that through Touch Math?
Well, humans developed math in order to explain the physical world. So we came up with these abstract symbols, and those symbols represent objects, units, things, processes for measuring and for counting. And what we do is it's through a multisensory process, because in our brains, if I said the word five, you would immediately hear something. So there's an auditory component. You would see the numeral five, you would probably see the F-I-V-E. You could see five dogs, five cats. You might see even an algorithm that had an X or a Y in it. So you've got auditory there. You've got visual. You can also even feel. It could have been that you picked up five cookies. But we know that when we say numbers, the fine motor neural pathways fire. So we know that that's all stored across a distributed network. So in order for somebody to master math, you have to give them those inputs across all of the senses, which is what multisensory teaching is based on. The fact that it's not just visual, it's not just auditory, it's not just tactile or kinesthetic. It's all of it, because those concepts are stored across our brains in all those regions.
Can you talk a little bit? I know there's the phases of going from a concrete, you know, objects moving to the touch math system. Like there's you teach five mm-hmm. cats yep. and then, you know, there's the pictorial and then the numbers with the, yeah. Can you kind of walk through that?
Okay. Yeah. That, most people know it. Well, mathematicians call it the concrete representational abstract continuum framework, because that very, very young children are tactile. And so everything is physical. It's three-dimensional. But very quickly, a typically developing child can apply and think about what a three looks like. It is a squiggle. Where did that particular squiggle get invented for, you know, our Arabic numerals? Mm-hmm. But they map that abstract symbol onto the concrete ones, so that if somebody says three dogs, they know that it's represented by three in a multitude of ways. So that needs to be, for most people, it's picked up very, very quickly, a matter of a couple of exposures. But if you have got the neurodevelopmental disorder of dyscalculia or the cognitive difficulties, you're not going to pick it up that quickly. You're going to need repeated measures if you ever do really get it. So with concreteness fading, it's explicitly done. You see three objects, you touch them, you feel them, you hear them, and you talk about them. And then we use the dot and we fade it. So it might be a picture of three dogs. And then you can fade out the three dogs and put them as dots actually on a numeral, which is why we did the plastic numeral that's so famous, because it was a mm-hmm. step that most people get through very quickly, but sometimes it has to be there, touched, talked about, used, broken apart in arrays and things like that. And then the dot can be faded to mm-hmm. be just the numeral, and then actually it becomes the algebraic expression or X, Y, the unknown that's being solved for. Does that make sense?
I love the research behind it. So I think it's also great that you fade out that it is multisensory, which we know a lot of neurotypical students or neuroatypical students learn best by doing, by multisensory.
Yes.
But I love that you fade out the manipulatives, because one, when you get older, it's kind of stigmatizing to have counting bears yes. on your desk. Yes. And also, I think that what I imagine is that once they learn where the dots are on numerals, mm-hmm. that they eventually can picture it in their mind. So if they're in a scenario where they don't have those special cards with the dots on them, or they could draw the numbers on their own with the dots on them, or yes. maybe even memorize it and picture it in their mind. So you think it's so versatile for all ages.
Well, that it is, and it's interesting. I get at the conferences, a lot of teachers will come up or administrators and say they still see the numeral in their head. And that's what thinking about when I said, you know, the concept of fiveness, we do. If I say five, you are seeing in your head right now, if I had you in an fMRI machine, your visual cortex would light up, because you're seeing the word and you're seeing the numeral, you're seeing fives of various things. But for an adult, if they realize that they still need that, there's very discrete ways of doing it. I've got adults who talk about they're doing a math problem. They may just put a couple of little pencil dots. A lot of them talk to me about finger tapping. They can't remember what 7 times 8 is, but they know 7 times 7. They've got it to 49. So they said their fingers will start going, they'll start counting on, you know, 50, 51. And it's enough of a trigger that it lights up that pathway and goes, the answer is actually 56. So it's a fascinating what our brains do to find ways to solve the problem if the pathway for automaticity of that math fact is not there. There's multiple ways mm-hmm. to get to it.
Well, and I love too that, you know, it's so great for addition, subtraction, but, you know, teaching skip counting and using it with multiplication, it's huge, because we have so many kids that can't memorize their multiplication facts. Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is just another tool that is very multisensory, that if they can just learn the skip counting, which to me is much easier than just straight facts, then they can skip count their way with the different dots and and touch, like you said, touch their pencil, draw whatever they need to do. But we see a lot of kids still today when we're working on math go through those steps with their pencil. They may not draw the dots, but I've watched them count because they're visualizing them in their head. I'm like, oh, they learned touch math.
Yes,
some of them make tally marks too. You know, they just haven't memorized their facts, but they have a strategy to use to figure out, like they know it's repeated addition or.
Well, and that's the whole thing. I know that in one of your last podcasts, you talked about math anxiety. Well, the anxiety triggers in when I can't do it the way it's supposed to be done. I can't remember the fact. But if I've got the fact that I can do tally marks, I can very quickly, you know, sketch out the circles. I can get it started. I don't have the anxiety because it's not about remembering one thing. It's I've got a couple of different pathways and it's like, you know, and I've got the extra time. I have an IEP. I've got that built in. We see that go way down on students because it's it isn't about solving it one way. It's about solving the problem. How I get there, there's multiple ways to solve mathematics problems.
Which, yes, I love that. And I am a very big supporter of figure out the way that works for you because there's several different ways to get an answer to a problem. However, a lot of students that are in school, especially like in public schools, their teachers teach it a very specific way, and the student is required to do it that way and to show their work. And so that's where we hear a lot of parents saying, I'm struggling at home to help my child because I don't get the way their teacher taught them. I don't get it. I'm not able to help them.
That's where the anxiety comes from too, because they can't replicate the method that was taught. It's very frustrating.
It's been really interesting watching with the decades that I've been doing this, what mathematics teaching was like 40, 50 years ago, where it was just memorize the algorithm. And if you didn't have the algorithm, well, everybody, it was okay to say, hey, your mom and dad weren't that good at math, you know, where the mom and dad would say, hey, if you bring home a C, I'm happy. Because we didn't know better. One of the interesting things that happened when we had, you know, 2010 and that, when the Common Core came around, was mathematicians actually stepped in and said, look, this is how math develops. You had the progressions that came out of Arizona State University. You had a different format that came out of, I want to say it was University of North Carolina. And suddenly it was like math builds. It's hierarchical. It's brutally hierarchical. And you start with number sense. You build to addition. Then you have repeated addition as multiplication. But I think, and we started to have the researchers go, yes, math starts with 3D objects and becomes 2D and then becomes 1D. That's the algorithms. So you can work math in multiple ways. And that affected the curriculum. So now the teachers who are teaching math now, many came from before 2010. The newer generation isn't. So now you've got parents going, well, this isn't how I was taught math or how I was done. So it's interesting. Time just moves so slowly because we have to age in and have our own children and grandchildren. But we're getting there. That's the one thing that I'm finding hopeful. And we've got cognitive sciences, we've got the neurosciences, we've got the educational scientists. You actually have those three disciplines starting to talk now because the educational science says if I do X and Y with math, the cognitive scientist goes, oh, well, let's do a research study and this is why it worked. And then the neuroscientist says, let me show you why it worked. You can actually watch your brain. And I think that this is a turning point in what's going on in education because you've actually got those three disciplines talking to each other and starting to reinforce. So now it's kind of like we can use it as educators. We use it at Touch Math all the time. It's like, what is coming out of the neuroscience lab in Paris with Stanislas Dehaene? You know, he is showing that all those areas light up. That's why we keep doubling down on multisensory. That's why we keep doubling down on explicit. We are knowing from the sciences that everything that comes into our brains is not forgotten. Instead, we've got these beautiful little systems that go, no, that one's not right. That was a wrong conception. But it never disappears. So we know now that by using the technique from ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis, errorless learning, and constant time delay in that, that if we can introduce a concept accurately the first time and expose a child to it a couple of times correctly, they may never lay down the wrong pathway. They may never say that 3 times 8 is 26 because they've heard a couple of times and immediately laid down this pathway of it's 24. So, and that's helping a lot of children. So we're just starting to see that come through in the practices that teachers are using. You can tell I can go down a rabbit hole around this stuff. I'm sorry.
It's so fascinating.
It is fascinating. I'm just curious also, we see a lot of students that are homeschooled and their mom or their dad or a parent or a grandparent is their teacher. They're not necessarily in a homeschool co-op with a certified teacher or anything. So is touch math something that a parent could learn easily and implement at home when they're homeschooling their student?
Yes, it is. We've got a fair number of homeschool parents who tune into our workshops. We actually have a suite of solutions, products that are designed for them. So it's not a big classroom set like you would see in a school. It is meant for the homeschool parent. And it is one that we keep refining and coming up with new things. But I think one of the most powerful things is the fact that we can all be advocates for, can we please treat numeracy like we did literacy? Mm-hmm. I mean, 20 years ago, you had reading as fundamental. All over public service ads, you know, hey, read to your child. It's the most important determination for what they're going to be doing in high school and in college. Well, we never did it for numeracy. Mm-hmm. You know, we never told parents, count with your child. You know, have them, you know, use their fingers, have them sort colors, have them talk about which is larger and which is smaller. So I think a lot of it isn't just touch math. It's like, can we get the word out that, you know, 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, you ask them to go get 3 cookies. They don't count out 3 cookies. They grab 3 cookies because they're subitizing. Yeah, so, where you go on school parents.
Do you have schools or districts that you're implementing touch math in that as a whole, they're all using the method together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of California, a lot of Illinois, a lot of Florida, you know, I could rattle off quite a few.
Good.
And when you're 50 years old, so when I go to CASE, the Council for Administrators of Special Ed or CEC, everybody that walks by the booth, oh, I use touch math, or I use touch math, or I was taught with touch math. One of the benefits of being around five decades as a company. But yeah, I would say we're used, good heavens, I'm trying to get marketing to actually come up with a number for me. But
in Texas, it would be, So and would you say it's a good program or a good technique for any age? Or what are the prime ages or the prime candidates for touch math?
Because it's math and we're built for the student who's struggling, the earlier we're used, the better it is, because we know that early intervention has a bigger effect size than later. Not that you don't do it with an older child, but just intervention, whether it's reading or math, the earlier you can find it, the better. Mm-hmm. And since we're really focused on the foundations, we go from the early numeracy skills through algebra. So you can do it at any age. So, but we're out there going, please, the sooner. And then we'll continue. But we get picked up for MTSS and RTI in a fair number of districts, mainly because we supplement everybody. Mm-hmm. You don't replace something. You add us on so that the child who's not making it in the gen ed, the typical curriculum, they've fallen through the computerized, the small group work. So it's that 1 or 2 children. Then you pull us in because we've got the breadth of all, and we just spend so much more time in the concrete and the representational. And that is usually where the struggle was, because in a classroom, they've got to get through all the standards by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And if you don't keep up, you keep falling further and further behind. So acceleration, picking out the key foundational skill that child missed. So that's what we developed Pro for. It was meant for, okay, the child's struggling in X, nothing else is working. Where did the concept break? Where was the connection not made? And it certainly wasn't at this grade level. it probably wasn't at the previous standard. It was probably one or two back. And so you need something real quick that they go, oh, I get it. And then you move them very quickly forward and try to accelerate them into that. So we've actually, accelerate, not just remediate, but I got to keep you caught up. The race is only 13 laps. And when it's done, everybody's expected to cross that finish line. So,
And they're learning a new skill almost every single day now in math. It's so fast paced, the curriculum.
Well, we've got the pressure coming in from, you know, employers. We're supposed to have them ready at the end of high school so that they can choose college and or, you know, college and career. Mm-hmm. And you've got the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics coming out saying, you know, a huge portion of our workforce, there's a term for it, but STEM makes up a massive number of the jobs in the U.S. I mean, just the technician who works in the blood labs. They may not have a college degree, but math is huge in what they're doing for estimation, running the computers, looking at the results and doing the interpretations. We're supposed to have them ready for that. And, you know, it's, math is important. And we definitely have got to get focused on numeracy being as important as literacy and doing something around the learning disabilities. Because I can give you a really horrible fact. 79% of individuals with disabilities are unemployed, not underemployed, but unemployed. Not going, that is a scary statistic.
That is scary. That's astonishing. Sad.
So I know we talked a little bit before we started recording, but I do want to share with everybody a little bit about your dyscalculia screener that you guys have developed and offer. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about sort of how that came about and then the information that you glean from it and how can anybody access it?
Okay. It came about mainly because we've been working and supporting this population for, you know, almost five decades. And we realized that it is grossly underdiagnosed, but it's got the same as we started doing the research around, okay, let's look at our populations that we support. We've talked about students on the spectrum. We've talked about students with ADHD, cognitive difficulties. Well, the math one has a name. That was a surprise to us that we didn't call it dyscalculia. We just said they're struggling with math. So let's give it a name because it's kind of like dyslexia. When you know it, it makes everybody go, okay, it's something that's addressable. Mm-hmm. And that there weren't any screeners out there that we could find that were for free. Everything had a cost to it. And we're going, well, that means that there are districts and stuff for whom, because there's a monetary barrier, we may have children that aren't being addressed. So the impetus was, let's do something as a gift back. And so, you know, we spent 18 months on the digging into the research, what's out there, what is it composed of? And it's going, oh, well, we've been doing this. Let's formalize it, get the content validity. And we put it out there in three different versions, so because you can actually screen for it, and a screener is supposed to give you data on yes, no, maybe. So we can start with three-year-olds and four-year-olds and do it with a written form because it's not appropriate to be done on a computer. There's a 5, 6, and 7-year-old version, and then there's one for 8-year-old on up to through adulthood. It's in Spanish and English. We don't collect the data, so you have to print it out immediately. But I think what was important that what we did, it wasn't just a screener that you looked at how many circles are there, what number is missing in the sequence and those things. It's that we designed it for the diagnosticians like you, Abby, where you want to know, give me some quantitative data, but give me some qualitative. What are you seeing in this child? Because the older you get, I can scam a test. You know, I can show that I'm you know, left brain to right brain if I know that that's what you're looking for. And we also put into it an action plan and things to do immediately, because if you've got the data, it can take a year. You may choose not to go through the formal diagnostic process, but at least there's some information there that there's something here and there are a set of interventions that work across this particular disorder, work across a lot of them. And there are things that parents can do, and then there are things that teachers can do, while we wait for somebody to make a decision as to child find, child study, diagnosis or no diagnosis. So it's simply access with disctest.com, and I'll send you over the link, although I know you guys have got it since you said
it. Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes because I think it's a really valuable tool. And Abby and I both took it just because we wanted to see, you know, what it was and the results. And I think it's so thorough. And I think it just nails all of those symptoms that we hear people talking about, the ones we've seen in people we've diagnosed. And I think it really helps clarify, this is something I need to pursue, or you know what? Maybe my struggles are coming from something else and maybe I need to figure that out. So I think it just helps give you a better path moving forward and gives you some answers in the short term while you, like you said, while you wait for a little bit more information to come.
Right. I think it does like the likelihood of having dyscalculia, right?
Well, and I'm glad that you guys are sort of going, okay, this was something that is useful, because that was what we're trying to do, is help people go, I'm not stupid at math, which is the phrase I usually hear from adults. It's like, oh, I didn't know I was nearsighted. You know, it's kind of like, I didn't know I needed glasses. And we're wanting it to be treated like dyslexia. Dyslexia's got a 20-year head start on dyscalculia. But we can take a chapter of their page and get advocacy going, which is like, this is addressable. It's not curable, that's for sure. But there are all sorts of things that can be done to make it so that you can definitely live with it. You can have any job you want. There are engineers that with dyscalculia. I mean, Einstein had it.
Yes.
So that's important. You know, that's important for people to hear.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that.
No, so
There are differences in ability, not really a disability, really.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. That is one of the things we're watching happening, is we realize that it's not yes or no. All of us exist on a continuum, and dyscalculia is simply the most severe. It's the tail end of the bell curve, but all of us have... 20% of us are estimated to have some of those factors, those disruptions in the neural pathways. So certain parts of math may be more difficult, but it doesn't prevent us from getting a PhD in mathematics. I just have to have additional supports and know that I'm not as strong in that, so I'm going to have to practice more at it. I'm going to have to pay attention to it. So no, thank you for bringing it up that way. It is not, it's not black and white. It's a continuum.
I totally agree. So before we wrap up, I do want to give you an opportunity to share. We have, math is the one thing that I feel like people feel the most helpless and hopeless about. And so obviously we've made it very clear we're giant fans of Touch Math, and that's a huge resource. Are there any other, like, what are your top two or three resources you would share with parents that you've come across in all of your research, either paired with Touch Math, or things that you've seen that have been really helpful?
I think the things that I have seen be really helpful is getting parents, especially with younger children, to just read books and point out the math. So that's a massive resource. Public libraries, you name it. You've got math in your house. Just doing it is the biggest resource a parent could access, and it's free. We just need to be aware of it. So there are some really great organizations out there. The Learning Disabilities Association of America. There's a website called understood.org that is huge in the learning disabilities. We're putting up resources. You all have resources. I mean, listening to podcasts and just educating ourselves. So there's four.
So I appreciate those resources. And I think that parents are going to find that really helpful. I cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your busy day to hang out with us today and just talk math. This, you know, I'm a little bit of a math nerd. I used to teach math. I have found a passion for math as a student who hated math. So I definitely have seen the light, and I see that, you know, just because you think you're bad at it, it doesn't mean you are. And that mental voice is very strong, and you got to learn how to turn that voice off and shut that down, because you never know what you're capable of. I am living proof of that.
True. I was not a fan of math, and I never became a big fan of math like Lori did, but I always found resources. So when I was in graduate school and I had to take statistics or any type of math course that was very challenging, I found tutors and different strategies that worked well with me, and lots of repetition and lots of late nights. So, you know, sometimes you struggle in something doesn't mean you're not capable of learning it and making good progress with it. You just have to put in some extra effort and time and
find the resources.
Wow. I think that's, I mean, I'm not much different. I came in at it because of Eureka Math, spending the 2 years there as we were writing it and mm-hmm. getting to hear from the mathematicians, the professors who actually study it, and realizing, oh, was I ever not taught, math was never taught properly to me. Now I know why I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And now I do. And it's like, okay, we got it's catch up time.
Right. We got work to do.
Yes.
We got work to do. I can't thank you enough for letting me geek out and go down the rabbit hole on some of the academic stuff. It's like,
I
talk about this stuff forever. And it's like, we've got to get things moving. So
thank you for sharing.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We'll include the information for Touch Math. We'll include the link to the dyscalculia screener in our show notes. Thank you guys for listening today. Thank you so much for being here.
Okay. Thank you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
If you guys have any questions or suggestions for upcoming episodes, you can always email us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com.
If you would like to visit our podcast website, it is www.ltldpodcast.com. You can find all of our episodes in chronological order, and you can even find them grouped by category. So if you wanted to click on the category learning disabilities or dyscalculia or processing disorders or ADHD, there are lots of different categories where every episode related to that topic is there. So take advantage of that. And we hope you'll listen. Keep listening until we at least reach 100.
I know. Join us for the next episode as we start our countdown to 100. You guys have a great day. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you guys again.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.